Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
Meet the next generation of podcast stars with SiriusXM's Listen Next program, presented by State Farm. As part of their mission to help voices be heard, State Farm teamed up with SiriusXM to uplift diverse and emerging creators. Tune in to Stars and Stars with Issa as host Issa Nakazawa dives into birth charts of her celeb guests. This is just the start of a new wave of podcasting. Visit statefarm.com to find out how we can help prepare for your future. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Grammar Girl here. I'm Mignon Fogarty, your friendly guide to the English language. We talk about writing, history, rules, and other cool stuff. Today, we'll talk about smelly, skunked words and how you can use pronouns to be more persuasive. As we've discussed many times, language is constantly changing. And one phenomenon that shines a light on language change is the skunking of words. Do you get your knickers in a knot when someone uses a word in a way that doesn't match its original meaning? Or when someone uses a word that sounds old-fashioned? Well, it's probably because that word has been skunked. The term skunked was introduced by lexicographer Brian A. Garner in his book Garner's Modern American Usage, where he described a skunked word as one whose meaning is going through a change that's hotly disputed. Words change or take on new meanings all the time without any problems, but skunked words are something different. Prescriptivists, those who stand by the traditional usage of language and its rules, typically hold firm to the original meaning of skunked terms, while descriptivists, those who are more progressive and accepting of new usages, are more likely to welcome their new meanings. As an article in the Better Editor of New England blog notes, during the transition, the skunked terms, quote, may smell bad to both sides, unquote. For example, the very first word Garner labeled as skunked was hopefully, which originally was an adverb meaning with hope, as in Squiggly waited hopefully for a piece of chocolate, with hopefully modifying the verb waited. But way back in 1702, someone used it to mean, I hope, to modify a whole sentence. As in, hopefully, chocolate will be on sale soon. That use has grown ever since, and linguistic sticklers who don't like it have been impressively resistant to giving up the fight. Today, even though nearly all style guides and dictionaries include the I hope meaning for hopefully, Garner continues to call it skunked and recommends against it, but also acknowledges that hopefully to mean it is hoped or let's hope is, quote, now part of American English and has all but lost its traditional meaning, unquote. And given that statement, it's actually surprising he still calls it skunked, because by his own definition, it doesn't seem to fit anymore. The other words Garner calls skunked, though, more clearly fall into the unsettled phase of a meaning transition, including data, which was originally plural but is now often used as singular, decimate, which originally meant to kill one in 10, but now is often used to simply mean massive killing or destruction, enormity, which originally meant great wickedness but is now often used to refer to something vastly huge, and fulsome, which originally meant copious in a neutral sense, but is now often used to mean excessively flattering or insincerely earnest. With all these terms, you could get grief for using them, or people may not understand your meaning however you use them, making them problematic for professional writing. Sometimes you just can't win. Other words lexicographers have called out as skunked include bemused, which traditionally meant confused or bewildered, even though many people today use it to mean amused, and nonplussed, which traditionally meant to baffle or confuse, and is now increasingly being used to mean unfazed. There's something especially funny about people being confused about the meaning of words that originally meant confused. Nevertheless, the confusion is so widespread that these words have generally been skunked, meaning it's best to avoid them, especially in writing. You may have noticed that most of these aren't the most common words we use, and being uncommon is something that sometimes seems to help a word get skunked. One example Garner highlights is effete, which traditionally meant worn out or exhausted, but came to be used to mean sophisticated or snobbish after Vice President Spiro Agnew popularized that meaning in the phrase effete corpse of impudent snobs. This originally mistaken meaning probably gained traction from the rhyme between effete and elite. Dictionaries list both meanings today, but there's also a third meaning becoming common that isn't in dictionaries yet. Effeminate, again, probably because of the similar sounds. If you use effete and the context isn't clear, people may misinterpret your meaning, so it's best to avoid it for now. It's skunked until people agree on its meaning, if they ever do. Skunking can happen quickly or gradually. Garner says, quote, "It may take 10 years or 100, unquote, but it's still temporary. During that time, the old school and new school camps battle it out in academia, writing, and on social media. The new usage is deemed wrong by the first camp, and the old usage seems weird to the second. To add to the conundrum, editor Aaron Brenner cautions us in an article for Visual Thesaurus that, quote, "Words in the middle of a meaning change aren't the only ones at risk of being skunked. Those only perceived to be going through a meaning change can become victims as well," unquote. An example is literally. Many would say it reeks, given its newer colloquial usage meaning, well, figuratively, as in, "I literally died laughing." But did you know it's been used in that sense since 1769? As Brenner points out, it, quote, "isn't in the middle of a change, but it has carried an unpleasant odor about it for over 100 years now that hasn't dissipated with time," unquote. So what happens when a word smells so bad no one can agree on its usage? Well, sometimes it gets bleached. In his interview with Rob Watts of Rob Words on YouTube, Merriam-Webster lexicographer Peter Sokolowski describes the infamous literally as an example of not only skunking, but semantic bleaching, which he defines as, quote, "when a word loses some of its meaning or has been diluted through a change in usage," unquote. Let's look at the sentence, "I literally died laughing" again. According to Sokolowski, the words "died" and "laughing" carry the meaning of the sentence. So literally has been bleached. Literally isn't necessary to understand the sentence. So what's more important, the origin of words or common usage? After all, language is about communication, and if common usage overwhelmingly sways one way, we start to use it to be understood. Remember, language is always evolving, and the goal of modern dictionaries is to describe how language is actually used, not how it should be used. As Watts emphasizes, quote, "words do matter. Do they mean the same thing to the person saying them as to the person who's hearing them?" unquote. And that's the problem with skunked terms. You can't be sure the person hearing them will think they mean the same thing you think they mean. These terms just aren't to the point yet where you can always use them clearly, regardless of their original or more modern meaning. Plus, some readers may even view your use as an error, which can hurt your credibility. All this doesn't mean, though, that you should never use skunked terms. If you're fairly certain your audience only uses these words one way, go for it. And they're also fine in informal, colloquial speech or writing, and fiction, where you may even want the ambiguity or tone such words convey. Skunked words actually get used all the time, and their meanings can be explained. Just navigate the skunks in the road carefully. That segment was co-written by Susan K. Herman and me. Susan is a retired multidisciplined language analyst, analytic editor, and instructor for the federal government.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's Saucony.com.
Remember the frustration of trying to memorize vocabulary and grammar rules, only to find you couldn't actually use the language in real life? Well, there's a better way to learn. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program with millions of users learning 25 different languages, and you can get it on your desktop or as an app on your phone or tablet. Rosetta Stone immerses you in many ways with its intuitive process. It's really different. You pick up the language naturally, first with words, then the phrases, and then with sentences. Plus, with Rosetta Stone's true accent feature, you'll get feedback on how well you're pronouncing words. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. Don't put off learning that language. There is no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Grammar Girl listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Is it rosettastone.com/grammar? That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/grammar today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How we use pronouns has long been at the crux of heated debate and social reform, not only in how we talk about gender, but also in what they reveal about how we relate to each other. By looking at what pronouns people use in a variety of high-stakes situations, psychologists and linguists have discovered that the pronouns we use reveal a lot about how we express power and social status. For example, looking at the way higher status people and lower status people use pronouns when they're talking at work, psychologist James Pennebaker and his colleagues found that people who took on leadership roles used fewer first-person singular words, so less I, me, and my, and more plural words, so more we, our, and they, while those in subordinate roles used the singular words more. Now, this may seem surprising when you first hear it, since I might seem like the ultimate power word, as in I expect or I need. But as anyone trying to effectively parent or supervise has learned, telling someone what they need to do by couching it in terms of what you want rarely works. Instead, to build a team, to motivate people, you have to convince people you're in it together and that it benefits them as well as you. So, welcome to the world of we and us rather than I. Since using we more than I seems to carry with it a sense of collective experience and a correlation with leadership, politicians have, not surprisingly, also jumped on that rhetorical bandwagon. A study that examined campaign speeches of Australian Prime Minister candidates found that the winning candidates used more inclusive we and us pronouns than those who lost in 80% of all elections. What's more, a series of data analyses for the Language Log blog run by the University of Pennsylvania professor Mark Liberman found that there's been a clear increase in the first-person plural pronouns, again, we and us, across presidential State of the Union addresses since World War II. This research suggests that we prefer leaders whose language suggests they see themselves as one of us, and that they socially identify as part of a collective, rather than leaders who set themselves apart by using pronouns that refer to themselves a lot. But this tendency to favor political leaders who prioritize social connectedness rather than exceptionality and unique experience doesn't seem to have always been the case, since the pattern only emerged in the last century. Of course, first-person pronoun use, I or me, isn't negative. It may simply reflect a status difference or an awareness of the language you need to use to get things done in different contexts. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be aware of how the way we use pronouns comes across. When we have to manage people and achieve group goals, whether in a boardroom or as a family unit, we tend to start using words that single inclusivity and highlight connectedness. In contrast, when we're trying to please someone who has higher status than we do, or when we're more focused on a specific role we're performing, we use more I words, as in I did X or I'm trying to Y. And not all I is created equally, as Dr. Pennebaker's work suggests. Sometimes I can express narcissism, as in I need or I want X. But just as often, it can also express politeness or softening, as in I hope or I think X, which we often have to do when we're in a less powerful position. Likewise, the we pronoun can also be used in ways that highlight separation and division. For example, when working within departments or groups that define a we in opposition to and not in concert with other groups, rather than seeing themselves working toward shared goals, an us versus them position. And of course, there's also the royal we, used by lofty kings and queens ruling over their subjects. In short, though, researchers do find clear patterns that show advantages when people use more pronouns that focus on others. For example, in a computational analysis of speech in mock job interviews, Naim et al. Found that people who used more inclusive and outward-focused pronouns, such as we and they, were rated more positively and as friendlier than people who used more I pronouns. So the next time you're in a high-stakes situation, be it a job interview or broaching a delicate topic with a spouse or a teenager, let the research guide you and pay close attention to your pronouns. That segment was written by Valerie Friedland, a professor of linguistics at the University of Nevada in Reno and the author of Like Literally, Dude, Arguing for the Good in Bad English. A version of this piece originally appeared on Psychology Today, and you can find her at valeriefriedland.com. Finally, I have a Familect story.
Hi, Mignon. My name is Corinne, and I have a Familect to share. In the early 90s, my mother gave my children a set of video cassettes called Quigley's Village. It featured a group of cute animal puppets who would sing songs and learn about Christian values. The videos were very hokey, but they got a lot of play during those years. This was a time when my children were at their peak preschool cuteness, with big eyes and big mouths and lots of energy. And to my husband and me, they looked like cute little puppets. So we began referring to them as the Quigleys. And to this day, he and I still use the noun Quigley to describe any child, small child, particularly one that has lots of energy or is very talkative. I am pleased to report that my children have begun having Quigleys of their own. We have Quigley number 6 arriving later this year, and it's always a happy time when the house is full of Quigleys. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Corinne. I love it. Congratulations on all the Quigleys in your life, including the pending arrival. If you want to share the story of your Familect, your family dialect, a word your family and only your family uses, call the voicemail line at 83-321-4GIRL. It's in the show notes, and be sure to tell me the story behind your Familect, because that is always the best part. And if you're a Grammarpalooza subscriber, you can also send a voice memo. I send text messages with fun facts a couple of times a week, and it's a great way to support the show. The first 2 weeks are free, and you can sign up by visiting joinsubtext.com/grammar or texting hello to 917-540-0876. Grammar Girl is a quick and dirty tips podcast. Thanks to marketing associate Davina Tomlin and operations specialist Morgan Christensen, audio engineer Nathan Sams, digital operations specialist Holly Hutchings, marketing assistant Cameron Lacey, and director of podcasts Brandon Getches, who just started taking an improv class. And I'm Mignon Fogarty, better known as Grammar Girl. Remember to look for Grammar Girl Conversations. This Thursday, I have an interview with Eli Bernstein about his Dictionary of Fine Distinctions that looks at words with close meanings, like what is the actual difference between a street, an avenue, and a drive? That's all. Thanks for listening.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
Meet the next generation of podcast stars with SiriusXM's Listen Next program, presented by State Farm. As part of their mission to help voices be heard, State Farm teamed up with SiriusXM to uplift diverse and emerging creators. Tune in to Stars and Stars with Issa as host Issa Nakazawa dives into birth charts of her celeb guests. This is just the start of a new wave of podcasting. Visit statefarm.com to find out how we can help prepare for your future. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.